intercepted by Notre Dame.
For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
touchdown Notre Dame,
or Irish win.
He's in for a touchdown. The Irish have come from behind.
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, Ed Jordanic. And Ed, for the next 20 minutes or so, although we could probably take an hour on this show since we missed last week's Pittsburgh game, we will talk about the Fighting Irish as they're now 10-0. You know, I think one of the things that I want to talk about really quick here is you got to give Brian Kelly a lot of credit for the way he's managed this season, mostly from the standpoint that I think he's looked at every individual game as an opportunity to win it and only win it and nothing more than that. And I think the Boston College game kind of typified that from the standpoint that he could have easily gone into that game and said, you know what, we needed a lot of style points here. We got to blow these guys out. We got to shut them down. We got to win big so that we can ultimately inch our way up into the BCS game. And I think that what you saw out of him was, look, I'm going to manage this football game in a way that we win it. I don't care what happens. All I care about is winning the football game. And I might argue that that's a little different than what we saw in his first season against Tulsa when we had a chance to win that football game, and he was trying to get some style points by throwing into the end zone to Michael Floyd on the far right side. But, you know, you got to give a lot of credit for Brian Kelly and his staff, and that, you know what, they win. I don't care what you say about them. Game in and game out, week in and week out, they win football games.
Yeah, no, I have no complaints with the way that Coach Kelly and his staff have handled the team this season. And I think you're right. I mean, I also think that they're realistic. I mean, by the same token, you know, when they say that they're really proud that they competed to the end, that they're happy with the way the team is bought into the process, and it is a process, and all those coach speak things that we hear, I think that's all pretty genuine. But I also think it's genuine when they talk about their limitations and their weaknesses and the things they have to improve on and quote unquote clean up, because there are a lot of those things. And I think, you know, I think Brian Kelly kind of, you know, is not, he understands that all that other stuff is really beyond his control and beyond the team's control. And even if they were to get some additional style points, there's no guarantee that they'll really pay off in the end. But he knows for sure that the only way that they can be completely out of the picture is if they lose. And that goes to your point. So he's going to try and prepare the team to figure out a way to win. And Saturday was a good example where they were kind of back on their heels for a little bit for a while. In Manti's words, you know, BC was throwing everything in the kitchen sink out there in terms of their play calling and their schemes, and the defense hung in there, and then the offense got their footing, and it was 21-6, but it was probably a 35-6 game. You know, we were moving the ball the both times we fumbled the ball, and I think both those drives would have, you know, resulted in some points. And of course Bennett Jackson kind of dropped a sure pick six, but or let it go through his hands. So but, you know, I think Notre Dame fans should really just enjoy this. I mean, you know, we haven't had this for a long time. Block out the BCS, block out all that kind of stuff. I mean, I actually, believe it or not, agree with Mark May. I mean, I think that there's a really good chance that, you know, two, if not all three of these teams that are undefeated are going to lose before the end of the year. And I'd really, you know, but I mean, I think Kansas State is going to lose to Texas, and I think Oregon is going to lose to Stanford, you know, or maybe in the Pac-12 championship game. And I think, you know, Notre Dame is going to have its hands full with USC, regardless of what USC does next week against UCLA, and regardless of some of their weaknesses. So, you know, there's a lot of football to be played. Notre Dame, I think, is in a really good position. And if they catch a break and one of the teams ahead of them lose and they take care of business against Wake Forest and then come out and play an Oklahoma-type game against USC, then they're going to find themselves in Miami.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I think you're right. You got to look at this season and you think to yourselves, okay, look, there's three teams left that are undefeated, but there's a lot in front of these football teams. You know, Notre Dame has Wake Forest. I got to believe that they could walk out there and win that game. Or they could have a game where they turn it over three or four times. The other team doesn't turn it over, and they could still win it. And that's who they're facing in Wake Forest. When it comes to USC, you're going to find, and I think this is what, you know, people don't take into account when it comes to analyzing college football, there is a lot at stake in that game. There's a lot of pride on both sides of that football team. And I think that USC is going to have an opportunity to claim that, you know what, that was no fluke that we were number one at the beginning of the season. We haven't performed like we thought we could, and that's our fault. But you know what? We got a lot of athletes on this team, and we're going to prove to Notre Dame and to the nation that we are deserving of the high class that we get. And so you're going to have an absolute war in that game. And in that result, anything can happen. Notre Dame could lose. It's totally conceivable that USC could play a great game. They could walk out and have one of their better games. They could gel together. And how can you argue against that? Notre Dame finishes 11-1. Is that really that bad of a thing?
No, it's a fantastic season. It's a BCS season. It's they probably go to the Rose Bowl and play Nebraska. I mean, it'd be a fantastic result. But again, that's why I'm saying that I think we should just enjoy the ride. You know what I mean? Because this just hasn't happened for a long time. This team has given us everything it has. Tough injury to DeVaris Daniels Saturday, but it looks like Kavari Russell's going to be okay. I just think we should enjoy this. I mean, senior day, you're right. Could they find themselves within a touchdown of Lake Forest in the fourth quarter? Yes, because they are not kind of a dominant undefeated team, but they're an undefeated team, which says so much about the character of them and the way that staff has prepared them and gotten them through week to week. So, you know, all you can ask for is a chance to go to Los Angeles to finish a regular season undefeated for the first time in, you know, since I was a senior in 1988. And, you know, and then after that, all you can ask for is a chance to catch a break. And, I really think that if Notre Dame can beat USC, there is a strong likelihood that they will be playing either Alabama or Georgia for the national championship. I think that's how the BCS rankings would hash out.
Let's talk about that a little bit. You know, I did end up watching the BCS countdown show tonight, and you know, a lot of people look at it and say, you know what, Notre Dame's the odd guys out. They got no chance. If everybody wins out, there's no way they can do it. But, you know, let's talk about that scenario a little bit. You got Oregon clearly has to face a very, very good Stanford football team. Stanford is about as tough as it gets up front defensively. And I think they're going to cause some problems for Oregon. But let's talk about that a little bit.
Do you know if that game's in Eugene or in Palo Alto?
You know what? I don't. I actually don't know where that game's
I'll
at.
I'll look real quick while we're talking, but sorry, go ahead.
Well, let's talk about this, though. So let's suppose that Stanford plays Oregon, and let's just assume that Stanford, fights their heart out, but they end up losing to Oregon, but it's a close game, okay? And maybe it is a 21-17 or a 17-14 battle. You know, I think in that regard, what if Notre Dame holds USC to 17 points or less? You know, how does everybody look at the season at the end of the year and says, okay, we got some common opponents here? First off, Notre Dame beat Stanford. Secondly, they hold USC's high-powered offense to 17 points or less. Do you really think that's not going to weigh in the minds of voters that Oregon gave up 52 points to that team? I mean, I think it's, you know, you can say what you want, but, you know, and I would argue more or less that I have a bigger problem with Kansas State. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Oregon is the better team of the two, and so therefore I like to argue against the Kansas State. Notre Dame going into the season, day one, had the toughest schedule in college football. There's no argument against that. Going into the game, or going into the season, they had the toughest schedule. Do you penalize them for scheduling the way that they did because it just didn't turn out that way? You know, I mean, I think a lot of people could argue, well, you know what, you're just cutting hairs here because you're a Notre Dame fan and you're looking for every angle. But, you know, the fact is that Notre Dame defensively, at the end of the season, we might be saying that, you know what, Notre Dame's the best defensive football team in the country. There's no doubt about it. They got the best defense. And if defense is truly win championships, then if we play Oregon or Kansas State, what are the chances that we lose either one of those two football games?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with all that you're saying, and I think there are definitely cases and arguments to be made. But I'm just mentally preparing myself, you know, for Notre Dame being the odd man out. But the thing is that, you know, to be in the conversation, you have to beat Wake Forest, and then you have to beat USC. So let's do that and see where the chips fall. And then if we're the odd man out, well, you know, it's a tough break, but then we've got a chance basically to win a BCS game and be the number two team in the country and you know, be undefeated, and there'll be all kinds of, you know, nonsense that we'll be talking about forever, and we'll remember this team as, you know, in our minds and our hearts, they'll be co-champions, you know, even if they end up number two in the ranking. So I just don't see, you know, there'll be a lot of talk, but I just don't see a downside for us as Notre Dame fans, because this season has been kind of a storybook in so many ways. Number one, they're always great seasons when the expectations are so dramatically exceeded, like they have been this year. And number two, how fun is it to be, you know, like, you know, we say this every week, but how fun is it to be staying up till 1 o'clock on a Saturday night watching Cal and Oregon when we've had no reason or interest in doing that for so many years? I mean, you know, that makes this all a lot of fun. How fun is it to be, you know, on a Wednesday afternoon at your office, kind of trolling through the, you know, looking at, you know, hotels in Fort Lauderdale and flights to Miami or flights to, you know, or accommodations in and around Pasadena or, you know, Lord knows what. I mean, that's, you know, how crazy is it to be going to work tomorrow and thinking like, well, you know, I could take a flight on Friday, or actually Saturday morning, and get to LA and take a red eye back after the game. You know, I mean, so I mean that is awesome. I mean that is really a good
it
time.
Is, and I, you know, I think that you could say a lot about Brian Kelly, but I think that he clearly, if going back, and I think a problem with Notre Dame fans is we've seen and heard this before. You know, we were 8-0 with Tyrone Willingham, thinking that, you know what, maybe there's some magic that's now starting to be stirred. Even though at the time, and I'm sure you were the same way, like, yeah, man, we've gotten lucky a couple times this season, Michigan State and so forth. But, you know, the fact is we kind of thought we were there. We thought we were there with Tyrone Willingham. We thought we were there with Charlie Weiss. And I think some people this year kind of felt like, man, are we experiencing the same thing where we think we're there and we're not, i.e. Mike Coffey, not to call him out because he's not on the show right now, but, you know, I think there were some serious concerns going into this season that, you know, is Ever Golson really capable of being a quarterback at a place like Notre Dame and executing in a way that's going to earn wins for this season? And I think that more than anything, you got to give Brian Kelly a lot of credit. If I'm any kind of quarterback in high school right now, and my worry is Brian Kelly the kind of guy that's going to develop me into a quarterback? Well, I got news for you, son. Look at Ever Golson. Because you got to give him credit for every ounce of ability that he has entrusted into Everett Golson and grown him into a college football quarterback. And this is a kid that is a redshirt freshman. This isn't a kid who's now a sophomore or junior. I mean, this is an absolute redshirt freshman that you can't argue with his play against BC, and even, you know, we didn't have a show against Pittsburgh, but man, look at the maturity of Everett Golson and where he's come from and where he is right now. And I think you got a point absolutely to the coaching staff for that, and it bodes well. But, you know, back to my point, I think that Brian Kelly, I've never thought that Notre Dame has had to have the number one, number two, or number three recruiting class in the nation. I've always believed that Notre Dame just needs to be in or around that top 10. They don't have to be the top recruiting class in the nation, because you can overcome that with good coaching. And here we are 3 years into it, and Brian Kelly has consistently recruited the kind of players that he's wanted to bring to this team. And although we have a great shot at it this year, I think the future bodes well. You look 2-3 years out, and you say to yourself, holy cow, man, we've got back-to-back-to-back good recruiting classes. We've got kids coming into this program that Brian Kelly believes are the kind of guys that he's wanted to bring in. And therefore, you think to yourselves, man, this is no fluke. This is something that's going to be a reality year in and year out, back to the Holt stage.
Well, it definitely feels real. I mean, it feels like the foundation is solid. It's built from the ground up. And I mean, look at it. When, you know, you look out on the field, right, and, you know, you see Stephon Tuitt, sophomore, you know, Lewis Nix, you know, second year, you know, player, you know, Sheldon Day, true freshman, Connor Schwenke, you know, couple years left, Springman, couple years of eligibility left, you know, if not, I mean, you know, and you see, you know, Kavari Russell, freshman, Josh Atkinson, sophomore, stepped in for him yesterday, you know, Barati in the secondary, you know, Elijah Shoemate playing a lot in the secondary. Obviously, you see Shembo, who had a terrific, terrific game last night. You know, so there's just you know, and that's just on the defensive side of the ball. But as you know, when you've got a good defense, you can, and this team has proved it, you can go beyond expectations. When you have a high power, and that's why I think, you know, some of this stuff is eventually going to catch up with the Oregons of the world, and you know, they've got some injuries now and all that kind of thing. But you know, Golson, to me, the biggest thing that I've enjoyed watching is that he obviously is earning the trust of his teammates, because they see that he's a winner, right? You know, he sticks his neck in there, he takes the losses hard, or the plays hard that don't work out, and he just lays it out there. And when you've got a guy that you can, you know, no matter how many times he screws up, or no matter how many times he makes the wrong read, or no matter, you know, whatever, if you've got a guy who keeps coming back, and that's why the Pittsburgh game was so important, bringing him back out there and being the guy who won it almost single-handedly in the fourth quarter and overtimes. You know, that's just the development of a leader, not just the development of a quarterback. And I think Brian Kelly deserves a lot of credit for kind of walking that line and understanding that is such an important part of a development, because in his offense, you know, that's the straw that stirs the drink. So you don't only have to have the right athlete in that position. You've got to have the right person. And I think that's been the real growing up part of Everett Golson's development this year.
Yeah, and he's done it in such a way it's really amazing. I think that, you know, for the Pittsburgh game, I really give a lot of credit to Everett Golson, because I don't know about you, but personally, I was really shocked when Tommy Reese came out in the second half. I mean, I kind of understood. I mean, here's a kid who gets his helmet knocked off. He's taken out of the game because of a rule that college football has inflicted this year, which I think is going to get overturned next season. But, you know, here he is. He's driving the football team. I mean, they're literally driving. His helmet gets knocked off. He's taken out of the game, and then all of a sudden, he's not returned. And even in the start of the second half, he's sitting the bench. And you're scratching your head thinking, man, was I really that bad? I was 9 of 15 for, you know, 100 yards, and I'm being replaced. You know, to me, I was like, holy cow. But, you know, and that's the kind of stuff that we don't know. We don't know what goes on in the sidelines. We don't know what goes on behind the scenes. We don't know what Brian Kelly is seeing in the eyes of his quarterback when he's talking to him. But I think right now you got to give a lot of credit to Brian Kelly for the way that he has managed this season and made the right kind of calls regarding Everett Golson, so much so that in the BC game, I mean, look at the times that he threw the ball away when he needed to throw it away. But then also, and here's what I think is the difference between this year's team and last year's team, look at the number of times that Everett Golson on third down ran for it and scrambled for a first down. And that is something that had zero existence last year.
No, he just,
it wasn't a possibility.
Right, exactly. And that's why he's in the game. I mean, he just extends plays, you know, with a, to a degree that just that it, it's just, you're right. I mean, we just haven't had that. I mean, it makes such a huge difference. And to be able to you know, even towards, you know, a couple of those first downs, I think towards the, you know, and yesterday in the Boston College game, they had to have known that he was going to be running. I mean, you know, I mean, and he still got the yards, the tough yards. He got some tough yards too for some first downs to keep drives moving, and I think on the last touchdown drive especially. So, yeah, no, I completely agree with you. You know, you worry about his durability, you worry about getting hurt. He's not a big guy. I think that Brian Kelly would be you know, his preference would be to be very selective in terms of designed run plays for Everett. You know, he's going to be he's going to get hit a fair amount of times no matter what, just because he is going to take off once in a while and move out of the pocket. And but there's no doubt that and we had to have that. I mean, we do not have, you know, the big explosive play guys on the edge on offense. You know, Eifert, it's pretty easy to, you know, TJ Jones has had a terrific year. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I love the way he plays. I love his hustle. I love his precision with the route running. His hands have been, you know, for the most part, really reliable. But, you know, DeVaris Daniels is still developing, you know, and then we've got some solid guys, but, you know, we don't have the big time playmakers, and it's easy to really crowd in on Eifert, even though I thought had his best game of the year against BC. And he and Golson, which is a real encouraging sign, seem to be getting a little bit more on the same page. So that's what I think, you know, makes Golson so important to this offense, because it is not a big play, quick strike, razzle-dazzle offense. But he needs to keep people honest you know, as long as we don't turn the ball over, I mean, our offense will be fine, and I think can win just about any game we play.
I would agree, and I think that, you know, that's where the maturity of Everett Golson is going, and I think that's where, you know, Brian Kelly is trying to develop him into that. I also liked the fact that, you know, here it is, we're 10 games into the season, and all of a sudden Brian Kelly introduces this sprint option. You know, all of a sudden, Golson, out of the snap, goes to a sprint option, and it's effective. And I think the thing about that is what it does is it says to USC, hey, guys, here's another thing you guys got to prepare for. And what that does is it you know, from a strategic standpoint, it says, look, you're gonna have to account for a scrambling quarterback. You're going to have to account for a pretty decent running game. You're going to have to account for a tight end over the middle that's going to, you know, catch four or five balls. And then you've got this sprint option that you better be prepared for, which means you guys can't be laying off trying to play a three-deep zone and think you can get by just forcing Everett to pick the pockets. So, you know, I really like everything that's going on about this season and the way Brian Kelly's approaching it with his method of, you know, trying to just win the game at hand, but then also grow this football team. And the truth is, we do have a redshirt freshman at quarterback. I mean, how many times do BCS teams end up in the championship game with a guy of this caliber who's that young, that inexperienced?
Well, Oregon might.
Oregon might, true, and I think the truth is the fact you know it goes back to everything that Brian Kelly's doing.
No, but you're right. I mean, look, Kansas State has an experienced quarterback. Alabama obviously has an experienced quarterback. Georgia has a very experienced quarterback. You know, you're right. I mean, you know, Notre Dame and Oregon are the two teams that are getting it done with very little experience at the quarterback position. But just one real last quick thing about Brian Kelly. I mean, he's obviously very hands-on this year with the quarterback position especially. I mean, you know, you whether it's from the media that he does or even during a game, you know, the things that he is really – he's coaching the hell out of Everett Golson in terms of fundamentals, getting set, arm position, footwork, all these kinds of things. You hear them talk about it. You hear them going over and over it again. And I think that this is really kind of an interesting kind of story to this that, you know, I think Brian Kelly is you know, he had kind of a little bit of an epiphany over the off season, and, you know, much has been made of him kind of, you know, scaling things back a little bit, getting more hands on, a little better relationship with the players and stuff. But I think he realized that he's figured out, I think he's such a good time manager and so organized that he's figured out that he could be, you know, the quarterback's coach, that he could be Everett Golson's kind of personal coach and still find time to be the head coach of this football team. And that's not always easy to do. You know, I always have this thing against, you know, offensive coordinators also being, you know, head coaches and whether you can do both. But he has really done that well this year. And he's I think partly he's been able to because he's got a terrific defensive coordinator in Diaco, who he obviously trusts completely. Now, next year, I'd like to see him get a little bit more hands-on with the special teams. But you know, he's obviously been the guy, you know, Chuck Martin, coordinator, of course, but it's obvious that Kelly has taken the bull by the horns in terms of Everett Golson's development, and it really seems to be paying off.
Yeah, he definitely is. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of things. You just touched on a good point, the special teams. We didn't quite have our better game against Pittsburgh. I think we did better against Boston College. But, you know, there's areas of this football team that clearly need some improvement. But there's also some strengths to this football team. And the strengths are what he is exploiting. And I think that you got to give a lot of credit. And believe me, I have been a downer about some of the offensive line, but most notably Golic, thinking that, yeah, you know what, this kid's in there because his dad's a big-time Notre Dame guy. He's a big-time ESPN analyst. But, man, he has really, really played his tail off this year, so much so that I think he's earned a lot of respect, not only amongst us as fans, but I really think among his teammates. And you got to give a lot of credit to a kid that has persevered in a situation like that. But other guys on the offensive line, and we don't talk about the offensive line much, but, man, holy cow, Zach Martin, I mean, these are guys that have just absolutely executed.
Very well, very well.
Game in and game out.
Let's not forget, Lombard didn't play a down before this year. You know, he was
completely
new. And, you know, Cave was hurt at the end of last year. He's been so solid. We almost never say his name. We haven't had a bad snap in a long time. I mean, there was a little exchange. I don't know if it was Golson's fault or Cave's fault last night, but there was a little exchange problem. But he's been very solid. Mike Golic Jr., obviously much more comfortable at guard than he was at center at the end of last year. And like you said, Watt and Martin on the left side of the line have just been money from day one. So, yeah, they deserve a lot of credit, and they're obviously being well coached. And, you know, we got a lot of linemen coming up in the next couple of years, and that's encouraging. I mean, it's you know, that was also the hallmark of the Holtz teams that you and I you know, use as a reference point for everything, is just, you know, whether a guy had ever played a down before, you almost just knew that you're going to have a great offensive line, that it was going to work well together, that it was going to be fierce. Really, really sound fundamentally, very, very disciplined and coordinated. And we might be getting back to that, which, I mean, you know, that's where it starts.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you're right. It's the offensive and defensive lines that control football games. And we certainly are there right now witnessing it here in Brian Kelly's third year, that he has got a very solid foundation. And based on his recruiting, it looks like he's got it for several years to come. you know, for us, which is a good thing. So it's going to be interesting. Clearly I think Wake Forest should be a very good win for us. It's all going to come down to USC. And I think the good news is, Ed, I am just glad that game is on the road. I would hate to think that that game is at home based on the way this season has gone. But I really like the idea that that game's on the road and our players can walk into a hostile environment and hopefully play to the capability that they've done all year long.
Ahead of ourselves, but I also think, you know, listen, there's a lot of guys on this team that beat USC at the Coliseum 2 years ago, right? You know, including Tommy Reese, including Eifert, guys in Manti, that were in the rain out there. I was there. I mean, that was a big win. And last year they know they laid an egg. So there's plenty of motivation just from a kind of a personal kind of team standpoint, besides all the BCS stuff and undefeated and all the stuff that we worry about. But just from a purely football team standpoint, they'll have something to prove when they play USC. And it's a great challenge to go against the Heisman Trophy caliber type quarterback like Barkley and put his butt in the dirt, you know, four or five times. I mean, that would really be a terrific cap for the season for this defense.
Well, not only that, but I think that, you know, if I'm Brian Kelly, I'll tell you what I would do is all week long, I would play the quotes from the USC players that you're a bunch of quitters. You guys are nothing but a bunch of quitters, and you're a surprise, and, you know, surprisingly, you don't fit in the mold of a USC because we don't have quitters here. I would just do that all week long and have it be that every single down should be about that. Let's show them that we aren't quitters and we are who we are, and let's make that statement emphatically. So, you know, I think there's plenty of opportunity for us to put a stake in the ground and say, look, man, we're Notre Dame and here's who we are and you better be ready for us. So hopefully that'll be the case against USC. Granted, I think we've got another game here against Wake Forest. You just never know. But I got to like our chances against them, and hopefully we head into that game 11-0, as it should be. All right, let's leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening. All right. It didn't, but it sure went quick. Yeah, I hear ya.